Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yellowstone, established through an act signed by Ulysses S. Grant, was the nation's first national park, March 1st, 1872.
It's getting late, sir. I was wondering, are we through for the evening?
Well, we're through with work, Josh. But this part's fun. I'm a national park buff, Josh.
I'm sorry, sir?
I say I'm a national park buff. I'll bet you didn't know that about me.
Well, I didn't know that about you, sir, but I'm certainly not surprised.
Why is that?
You're quite a nerd, Mr. President.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Is it nerd-like to know that Everglades National Park is the largest remaining subtropical wilderness in the continental United States and has extensive mangrove forests?
Just a little bit, yes.
There are 54 national parks in this country, Josh.
Please tell me you haven't been to all of them.
I have been to all of them. I should show you my slide collection.
Oh, would you?
Grand Canyon, Bryce Canyon, Badlands, Capitol Reef, Acadia, which is so often overlooked.
You should certainly feel free to keep talking, but I need to go home so that I can be back in my office in 4 hours.
Dry Tortugas, Petrified Forest, North Cascades, Joshua Tree, Shenandoah National Park, right here in Virginia. We should organize a staff field trip to Shenandoah. I could even act as the guide. What do you think?
Good a place as any to dump your body.
What was that?
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Things are going to start happening to me now.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, March 16, 2022, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. Day 422 of the Biden-Harris administration, 235 days until the 22 midterms. I'm on Instagram, the Bob Seska is my handle, Twitter, Bob Seska underscore go. Memorize it, if you will. Okay, how you doing? I hope you're not too freaked out by the endless fire hose of potentially world-ending calamities. I think that's one of the reasons why I think you'll dig today's show. Rocky Mountain Mike, a.k.a. Mike Hardiman from The Stephanie Miller Show, is here today, and I originally intended to ask him about Russia, no-fly zones, all that crap. But we ended up spending most of the hour talking about national parks. Mike's an accomplished photographer on top of being a broadcaster and comedy writer, and he spent years photographing the parks. Needless to say, he's an expert. So this was a hell of an excellent break from the chaos. Links in the description under this episode at bobseska.com for all of Mike's things, including his photography website. Meanwhile, think about supporting this show by signing up for our bonus content at bobseskashow.com. So this is me and Rocky Mountain Mike talking about fun things.
Bob Seska plays more music.
Now the light can move in the dark, no denying your lips. No,
oh, by the way, people in the chat room for the second time have complained about your microphone placement on the Stephanie Miller Show.
But what, being too quiet?
No, it's just right in front of your mouth, and so we don't see your mouth. So
is that the problem, that people don't see my mouth and there are complaints?
Well,
because of
here's a suggestion, take it. You know, I know how much I like suggestions. Bring it in from the side, you know.
But are you serious? People are complaining that they can't see my mouth. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, they aren't complaining. They like you. They just don't like the way that looks. You know, it just looks kind of funny. It looks like you're behind. Well, you are. You're behind something.
Is everyone cool with my wardrobe at the very least? I mean, I hope you don't mind. I didn't wear a suit for today's show. Did you see that tweet from Peter Schiff today? He complained that Zelensky only wore a T-shirt when he addressed a joint session of Congress, that he should have gone home and picked up a suit in order to present himself to Congress. His home is probably rubble right now.
Yeah. He's running for his life, and they're complaining about a fucking suit.
I mean, granted, this is Peter Schiff. He's not much of a big deal. He's the chief economist and global strategist at Europac.com. I don't know what that even means, but apparently he's like a clothes horse. He's like Joan Rivers on the red carpet. Why didn't Zelensky? My God, the disrespect.
He should be the chief executive of Eurodick.
So, hey, I missed this yesterday because we were recording the show when it came down. What the hell did Boebert say about Lieutenant Corporal?
She said that she had, I forgot what the quote exactly was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can look it up, but she referred to having spoken to someone who was a Lieutenant Corporal.
And the first thing I thought of was that episode of MASH where they first introduced BJ and Hawkeye makes Radar parade around as a corporal captain. Just a new rank. New rank they're experimenting with.
And I got that one a lot on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Including mine. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Here we are from the Daily News.
Okay.
She said she thanked the mother of a lieutenant corporal. Let's see. claims that a few parents of U.S. soldiers killed in Afghanistan reached out to support her after she interrupted President Biden's State of the Union earlier. One of them, she claimed, was the mother of a lieutenant corporal.
Dum-da-dum-dum-dum. Yeah.
So, and then Alexander Vindman pointed out there's no such thing. He said, so what is the nationality of the mother who thanked her?
Lieutenant corporal. Wow. Yeah. Well.
Yeah, and I said it's going to take an army of lieutenant corporals to take down the gazpacho police.
This is perfect. Yeah, and by the way, Lauren Boebert was one of, 13 Republicans who voted against the embargo on Russian oil. She was all for bringing in more Russian oil into the United States. That's how she voted.
Okay.
So, yeah, you can't take anything she says seriously, about anything. I was just about to say about Russia. But
well, you
now,
know, and I don't
nothing.
Know yeah. what the exact figures are in terms of how much Coke money she takes, you know, but.
Yeah, yeah. So, speaking of Russia, what are they saying about Ukraine in your very red part of the world? What's the scuttlebutt down there?
I swear to God, man, I haven't left the house in 2 weeks.
Really? Are you serious?
No. Yeah. I'm on vacation.
Oh, nice.
So, I just immediately went to the Outer Banks with the doggy with my new camper.
Yeah.
To give that whole setup, you know, the dog and the camper and everything. I haven't ever done that before. And I haven't ever taken a camper somewhere where I didn't have an electric hookup. So I'm testing the solar and the generator and everything else, you know.
Yeah. How did that work out? How did the solar panels work out as far as maintaining enough power for you to run things?
What they do is they charge the battery. So it's a matter of how much do they charge the battery. And I don't have a really good battery meter installed yet. I bought one. I just haven't installed it yet.
Okay.
So I'm not really able to tell just how much it gave me. But at this time of year, and I only had them out for maybe 3 hours or 4 hours.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But, you know, I have 200 watts of solar panel.
Well, I think Buzz was concerned a couple of weeks ago that...
About the studio?
Yeah, whether you could actually record song parodies in your RV.
Well, what's nice about this model of trailer is, in order to keep the condensation to a minimum, the walls are lined with carpet.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And, okay.
So it's already set. It's just and there are windows, you know, with shades. But I actually am planning on doing this. You know those semi cylindrical backdrop things you have for a microphone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They go around. You know, those do a really excellent job of deadening everything. And, you know, you can get one for like $150. So when I hit the road, I'm going to get me one of those.
Nice. So you're going
to
be
I will be continuing to, you know, do everything. So.
All right. That sounds great. Well, like you and Chris Lavoie, I'm a total, like, national parks nerd. But, I've got the passport stamp book and everything. I collect that shit. I haven't had the time to make it to some of the big national parks. I mean, that's kind of the contradiction here is that I love the national parks. I support the national parks. I've visited dozens of them. But I haven't really gotten to any of the big ones. So if you were to put together like a list of like the top five must-see national parks in the United States, which ones would they be? Like what would be at the top of your list? Or if you want to start at number five and work your way up.
Like what? I don't know if I could put them in order, but let me just tell you, Zion National Park for me is probably number one. Mm-hmm. You know, or it'd either be Zion or Yosemite. But the thing about Yosemite, from a photographer's standpoint, I think it's a lot easier to get somewhat more original images out of Zion. I think from the standpoint of just having fun, Zion is more fun.
Yeah.
Hiking the Narrows there, taking the Virgin River hike up the Narrows where you're walking along and it points – it's only maybe 20 feet wide, but each side of the canyon goes up 3,000 feet.
Jesus.
That's pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just so much fun. I've never been there. Even when I've been there and there was no way it was going to be a picture because the water was flowing so much that it was muddy and I couldn't take a picture. Even then, it's just fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'd say Zion, Yosemite, Arches National Park, Canyonlands National Park, you know, those are both around Moab. Yeah. I mean, Canyonlands itself is actually three different parks. It's got the Islands in the Sky District. It's got the Needles District and it's got the Maze District. And it would take you to really thoroughly explore all three of those. It would take you like a month.
That is a perfect time to have an RV for an exploration like that, right? Is there a place where you can park your RV and just explore around on foot?
There's campsites, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And most of the national park campsite, well, you know, some it depends on where you are. But I'd say about half and half are – or half of them are you have to make a reservation and half are first come, first serve.
Interesting.
So like another great park that I was in last year or a year and a half ago was Grand Teton National Park.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, showed up at 8 o'clock and just walked around this camp area until I saw somebody that was leaving and I got their campsite and I got to stay there for 2 or 3 days, you know, and it was right on Lake Jackson. You could walk like, I'm not kidding, like 100 feet and be right on the lake and see Mount Moran and everything. It's just unbelievably gorgeous. And it was, you know, with my senior discount.
Yeah.
it was like $12 a night, you know.
And so. Tetons, that's right next to Yellowstone, right? It's all in the same neighborhood. Yeah. So you can kind of do both of those major national parks at the same time, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, although I must confess, I've never actually been to Yellowstone.
Are you serious? That's one that you've never been to, huh? Wow.
Right. The thing is, it's all about time and photography.
Yeah.
And I don't really like the photography I see from Yellowstone. It's just not my thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not willing to give up an opportunity to shoot Teton for Yellowstone. So I don't ever go over there.
What do you mean by it not being your thing? Like, I'm curious as to what qualifies someplace that's attractive for your photography.
Yellowstone doesn't have like Tetons, you know, they just shoot right out of the plains.
That's
what makes them so dramatic.
Right.
There's nothing like that in Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. They've got like a couple of decent waterfalls, but it's mostly about the geysers, you know.
Yeah.
And some the wildlife, but I don't care about shooting wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you know, it's just not my thing. That's all.
Yeah. 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 It's just more into the landscapes. See. Yeah.
It kind of, so we got Zion, Yosemite, Teton, and then I mentioned Canyonlands and Moab. So that's five right there.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
But you know, I also love Mount Rainier and, like Bryce Canyon in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one in Utah. oh, my brain is not working. Capitol Reef, I've never been to, but okay. That's going to be, you know, on my cross-country thing. I'll try to take that one in.
So do you—
– The thing about national parks, though,
yeah,
especially this year, because the floodgates are going to completely go. I mean, this is going to be a much bigger year than last year as far as people getting out there. And last year was a record. As far as people booking campsites.
That's so great.
National parks are just magnets for people, especially during, you know, the summer months and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I typically avoid them like the plague during those times if I can. And I go to other places that are, you know, public lands and have things like wildflowers that I can shoot, but not necessarily national parks because it's just too crowded.
Well, what's great about that, and I'm so glad to hear that they were crowded last year and they're going to be even more crowded this year, because it's still one of the most affordable yet one of the greatest places to go on vacation, especially if you have a family. Because it's like, what, 10, 15 bucks to get a carload of people in the front gates, and then you're all set. And I think some places they waive those fees on occasion. So
they do on some national holidays, on Veterans Day, for instance. Yeah. Those are free national parks weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I've got the senior pass that I bought right when I turned 65, and I happened to catch it like just a couple of months before they jacked up the rate.
Yeah.
So for the rest of my life, I can go to any national park and I paid for this thing and I never have to pay another dime. It was $10.
Oh my God. That's just incredible. One of the great things. And you know, you and I and the circle of people we go around with, we spend a lot of time being critical of the United States, and 99% of the time it's well-deserved. But at the same time, there are things that are absolutely gorgeous and irreplaceable about the United States and the national park system. I mean, the subtitle, the Ken Burns
and it's
special.
It's one of the few things that really unites almost everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, across all party lines, everyone supports national parks. Certainly on the Republican side, they're more interested in leasing out big chunks of it to private oil drillers.
Well, that's actually not true. I think even Republicans, at least the ones aren't just complete wackos, will draw the line at national parks themselves. National forest land, leasing out that, and also BLM land, those are all different things. And so we tend to lump all that together and say that's national parks, but there is a distinction there. And I think even a lot of Republicans draw the line at drilling in national parks. You know,
with your photography, I mean, do you limit yourself specifically to national parks, or do you do national forests, national battlefields, national cemeteries?
I just go
cemeteries?
Wherever something is unique or interesting to photograph,
right,
you know.
Right.
And like, that's why I was an Oklahoma photographer, because I was living in Dallas and I was just getting into this, and I discovered some places in Oklahoma that were really pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That had not really been done any kind of justice from the standpoint of a decent landscape photographer.
Yeah.
So I just zoned in on that. So, okay, I'm going to be the Oklahoma guy. And so I'd go spend my weekends. I'd take my time off and I'd cover the state because I wanted to get like the material for a calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up having an Oklahoma calendar for 17 years. Just because of that. And it was great because you would go somewhere and you would get this image and you realize, you know, nobody has really done this. Whereas if you go to Yosemite, you can throw a rock and hit a photographer. You
know? Yeah, I imagine so. Is it one of those experiences that you would recommend maybe going around with a park ranger on your first visit and getting an overall sense of what the national park is all about?
That's if you can get a park ranger. Yeah. I mean, they're understaffed almost everywhere.
Yeah.
And what they do is they do set times where they take people on nature walks and things like that. Mm-hmm. But what you typically do, if you want to do something along those lines, you just go into the visitor center and ask. But really, you get most of your information from other photographers.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see an image and you might, you know, do some research and find out where that was. I mean, when I started in the 90s, it was literally, I was working at American Airlines and we would go on lunch. Myself and a couple other people who were interested in this would go to the bookstore.
Yeah, fancy that.
I would literally do this. I would say, wow, that's cool, pointing at a picture of Red Rock Crossing of Sedona. Mm-hmm. And this is like a Tuesday, and Saturday morning, we're on our way to Sedona, you know, because you can fly for free. And,
yeah. Yeah.
And I would, that's how I literally would do it. Just find a place in a book. Okay. That's what I'm going to shoot.
Is that how it started for you? Is that where the passion yeah. for it began?
Well, you know, how it started was my coworker, Bill Sizelski, who I used to work with this guy at Tandy Electronics in like 1988.
Wow.
And then when I went to American Airlines, he came like a year after me. So we ended up both working there together for like 8 years. Mm-hmm. And so one day I'm walking by his cubicle and he's got one of those Eckerd 16x20 posters, you know, where you give your film to the people and they make a poster out of your picture. And it was a picture of Grand Teton. And I said, wow, what's that? And he told me, and I said, oh, wait a minute. You just got on a plane on Saturday and just flew to Jackson Hole just to take that picture? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, wait a minute. You mean I can actually do that?
Yeah. Talk about an aha moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he actually turned me on to Zion. Mm-hmm. So we would do these trips, you know, and I always made an analogy to like the Apollo moon landings, where you have a schedule, you have so much time, you have so much budget, and can you get out there and mm-hmm. bag a really great image during that course of time and get back to the plane and get back home, you know, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And some, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, I have to credit him for getting me. I didn't even own a camera at that moment. Mm-hmm. So we actually, our very first trip together to go shoot something was the Very Large Array in New Mexico. The radio's telescope.
Oh, yeah, right,
contact.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So we actually got in touch with the people that run that and got permission. I had to get written permission to go and shoot. And we flew into El Paso and drove 4 hours to get there and napped out in the car for an hour and a half until the dawn came along and then shot. It just had an amazing morning with light and everything. And just you're out there and there's 27 of these radio telescopes and they all of a sudden all start moving because they're all going to track the next target.
Yeah, sure.
And it's just – and it's so silent except for that. It's just jackrabbits and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Just really – just amazing amount of fun.
I think a lot of people take them for granted. I think it's this incredible resource that we have, not only for vacationing, but seeing natural splendor and learning about the geography of the United States, the incredible geography of this continent. And,
yeah, I mean, it is not uncommon in the Western national parks to encounter mostly European people.
Right.
And Japanese, or Asian people, I guess. And, you know, just it's people, it's just not on their radar, Americans.
Yeah.
But I think it also, it's associated with like the 50s and sort of square moments and things like that. It's just not, you know, it wasn't cool, I think.
Yeah.
But because of the pandemic, I think a lot of people have been forced to think about not going to Europe and things and not going to the Caymans or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, we can do this. And so I think the pandemic has turned a lot of people onto the experience of doing it.
Okay. Back with more Rocky Mountain Mike right after this.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Was the United States the first country to set aside national parks? Barack Obama is narrating a new series, I think, for Netflix. And
yeah.
It's not just about the national parks in the United States, but national parks around the globe. And
yeah, Yellowstone was the first one that was actually worldwide. Yeah. Yellowstone was the first one that was declared to be a national park, although Lincoln set aside Yosemite and protected it. But it wasn't until after Yellowstone was made a national park, that Yosemite was made a national park.
Mm-hmm.
That started, then now it's a worldwide thing.
It's incredible how they've endured as well, because especially watching the Ken Burns National Park series. And by the way, I love the subtitle of that series, America's Best Idea. And it really is. It's truly the best idea that the United States has come up with. And what's fascinating about that is the battle that has taken place since Yosemite first established. It was the 1870s, something like that. And
Lincoln actually signed it to give it protection. So that would have been, I think, around 1863, I think.
Okay. So when it first became established, when the National Parks Act was first passed by Congress,
that was Teddy Roosevelt.
So. Okay. So from that point forward, in fact, even prior to that, it's just been an ongoing battle to save them. And it hasn't, I guess, maybe not necessarily along party lines. It's been more of a natural resources versus corporations kind of thing.
Right. In that series, there's the guy who was actually the governor of Arizona at one time, who was charging people to walk the Bright Angel Trail. In the Grand Canyon. And it took forever to get that guy out of there.
He was
doing it illegally, and Canyonlands was not established as a national park until 1980, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, it had been the site of a uranium boom.
Yeah.
And so when you go to visit Canyonlands, you can still see all the roads that were created for the uranium mining that will take centuries really to get back to their former.
Yeah. And in fact, that's weirdly enough, maybe not necessarily the uranium mine, but one of my areas of interest when it comes to national parks, and specifically national battlefield parks, which is primarily the parks I visited, at least out here on the East Coast, is the history of the tourism in these parks. Some of the ridiculous and dumb ideas that they've come up with as far as attracting tourists to national parks. For example, I'm at Gettysburg all the time. And some of the things that they have put on that battlefield over the years have been utterly ridiculous. I mean, for the longest time, there was a Stuckey's restaurant right in the middle of the day three Pickett's Charge battlefield at Gettysburg. Yeah. One of the most gruesome battles on American soil in the history of the United States. And they put like a Stuckey's right there, right smack in the middle of it. And
I don't know if you're familiar with the Yosemite Firefall.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
But, every night, for decades, they would, start a big fire at the top of El Capitan and just shove the embers, the flaming embers, over the side as a ooh. And they didn't stop doing that until 1971.
God, what a dumb idea!
Yeah, and then with state parks, I got familiar with this in Oklahoma. There's Alabaster Caverns State Park in Oklahoma, where up until like 10 years ago, they would have a spook show. Like it was a haunted house.
Oh, God.
And Turner Falls, which used to be a state park in Oklahoma, is now owned by the city of Davis, Oklahoma. It's so funny. They called me up and wanted one of my images of Turner Falls to put in the city hall there. And I said to this woman while she was on, I said, by the way, can you explain to me, they have going up it's a beautiful place, going up the river to where the waterfall is, were life-size plywood cutouts of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I said, can you explain that to me?
Yeah.
And this woman, she goes, well, got to give the people what they want. And I'm like, okay, now who came to you and said, be really great here?
Yeah. Yeah.
See, next to the waterfall, there is, I swear to God, there's a Subway sandwich right next to the waterfall.
Of course there is.
That's what happens when you turn it over to a city instead of a state.
And I debate with myself all the time about shit like this. Mike, for example, going back to Gettysburg, talk about turning a place into a giant haunted house. Gettysburg is now all about the ghost tours. Every other,
really?
Yeah.
Oh,
if you go through the town, every other door is a guy standing out there with tickets and Victorian garb, you know, leading ghost tours around the battlefields. And so now,
wow,
one of the main reasons people go to Gettysburg now is to look for ghosts. And on one hand, I'm like, this is such colossal horse shit. Granted, you know, when you go to Gettysburg, there was so much death and so much anguish there. And maybe it's psychosomatic to an extent, but you can feel an energy about that place. You don't need to hype up some sort of ghost story around that energy. It's palpable. But the fact
at least it's restricted to people in the surrounding areas and the touristy aspect of it. You know, there's almost no avoiding that.
The way I kind of put myself at peace with the concept is that I hope people come for the ghost stories and stay for the history. You know what I mean?
Right,
where
exactly.
The ghost stories bring them in the
door. Same with the pandemic. You know, when people get out and actually put their feet on the ground in these places, I'll never forget the first time I camped out in the Maze District of Canyonlands. I had a rented van, but I had swore to myself, you know, I'm going to get out and pitch a tent tonight. I'm not going to stay in a hotel. Mm-hmm. And I had to, because the place I was hiking to photograph these 5,000-year-old petroglyphs you really had to be there early in the morning.
Yeah.
So the closest road is 20 miles away, and the closest town is 50 miles away.
Hmm.
So I had this place. It's perfectly legal to camp there. It looked like the crater of a moon crater or something. It was just this big sort of circular area. And I sat there and watched the moon rise and looked at the stars and, you know, listened to my Vangelis music. this was like 92 or so. But when you
I didn't know you were a Vangelis guy. That's interesting. Are you serious? Because you know what? I have all of his albums with John Anderson because Yes. And so those are some of the most beautiful albums, Private Collection.
Oh, yeah.
John and Vangelis is one of the most beautiful albums.
Well, it started with Cosmos, and then there was Blade Runner. And so I just ended up getting the whole catalog, you know. And that was my stoner music, really, to watch, you know. But to get up the next morning and hike into this canyon and look at this stuff that, you know, you're all by yourself, you get into that mode for a few days, and it's like something happens to your body.
Hmm.
There's some sort of calming effect of it all. It just you just completely lose track of the outside world, and you're tuned into something different. And I think hikes in the desert, for some reason, that does it to me.
Interesting.
And so, like taking a hike through Escalante, through the middle of Utah, or something like that, it's just like that is like Zen for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, you can't really explain it. You can't do it with a photograph or anything. You have to actually do this. And it's so funny because Kathy Yang, who's this person I worked with, and bless her heart, she passed away 20 years ago. But I explained this to her once. I said, you know, if you get out on the Grand Canyon on a rafting trip and just a couple of days of that, it will change you.
Hmm.
And she said, no, it would not. It would not change me. Okay. But, you know, it's one of those things. It will happen. And, it's like something inside of you goes, wow, wait a minute.
Hmm.
There's like a completely other different side of everything that I just don't get in my day-to-day life. And for me, that's what I'm always going for is just that. And I can't, you know, I spent most of my time over those 30 years staying in hotels because it was a matter of time and convenience and everything.
Yeah.
And this RV trailer I bought is really just a way to do it as cheaply as possible. I would just as soon stay in a hotel. I don't care. The only difference is if you're in a place where there is no alternative and you have to do it to have the experience, like hiking the Muir Trail or something like that in the Sierras, somewhere where you have to be on foot for 2 weeks or something like that. That's a different experience. That's to me, I'm not really doing that for the pictures. I'm just doing that for the experience.
And in fact, you're channeling John Muir. Yeah, you mentioned the Muir Trail. That was, what, like 95% of the things he wrote in his lifetime were all about communing with nature in these parks and defending that privilege to be able to do that. And that was his life work.
And I firmly believe that that's why Teddy Roosevelt ended up being such a champion, because he actually put his boots on the ground and dragged other powerful people out to experience that as well. And that led to Rockefeller being inspired, I think, to give up Grand Teton National Park and so forth. And it's just a matter of experiencing it. And that's just not something you can – there's no other way you can do it. You just got to go and stay and watch it happen.
What about East Coast National Parks? What would you recommend that's within driving distance of people who live back here where we do?
Well, that's why Great Smoky Mountains is the most visited national park, because it's close to Atlanta, Knoxville, Charlotte. it's got so many major metropolitan areas around it where it's easily obtainable.
So, for example, with the Smoky Mountain, is there like a central site to see? Like, I think a lot of people have this impression that when they go to a national park, there's like, the Yellowstone, it's the geysers, it's Old Faithful. We got to see Old Faithful.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Smokies, there's really only like two major roads that go through it. Uh-huh. There's a million hiking trails, and it's the vast majority of Great Smoky Mountains National Park is you got to hike it. But it's not like that. I mean, there's a few waterfalls. There's a few little nice places that I and other photographers over the years have designated being like the places to photograph. Mm-hmm. But it's not like Yellowstone, where you've got Old Faithful and you've got Yellowstone Falls. And so it's not like that. It's more you're going for the trees and the rivers and just the nature part of it. But it's a big park. I love Acadia. And I want to get to – I have my friend Vernon McKimmy, who I used to work with in Tulsa Radio in the early 80s. He's a big liberal on Twitter, and I'm always liking and retweeting his stuff. He used to be the – talk about a dream job. He used to be the public relations guy for Roosevelt Campobello State Park up there in Maine until he retired. And so he's still up there in that area. So that's on my bucket list, and hopefully I'll do it this year, is go up and do Acadia in the summer.
Have you been down to Everglades yet? Have you been down there?
No, I haven't done that. Yeah. I've only been to Florida once, and that was to try to watch a space shuttle launch that got canceled. So,
you haven't been to Dry Tortugas either?
Actually, I did go to Florida on I was hired as a photographer for Pike Electric to take some pictures of some projects they had going, stringing power lines with various crews on both coasts of Florida. And I did them both in 2 days. So those 2 days and then trying to go see the shuttle launch, that's my entire Florida experience.
Yeah.
I'd love to see the Everglades. That'd be great.
Yeah.
I love cypress trees. I love shooting them.
Right, and Everglades, too, has manatees. That's why I would go, to catch a glimpse of the manatees before they're gone.
See, my thing on animals is an animal's an animal, and it's always going to be that animal. and so if you happen to catch it in a dramatic pose or something like that, I guess that's great. But I'm just much more about the rocks and the trees and the other stuff. Stuff that doesn't move.
Do you ever get asked stupid questions by tourists? Do people ever come up with you and ask like really ridiculous questions? Like, here's an example. When I go to a battlefield park, invariably I'm going to hear a question like, "Was that monument here during the battle?" And I got to go, "Yeah, in fact, it was. They had a time traveling DeLorean, and they were able to get the monument up before the battle. It's an amazing story." Usually that's when they walk away and ask someone else. But do you ever get any ridiculous questions from people, or do you pretty much keep to yourself?
Well, mostly it's my camera, because I have an 8x10 field camera that looks like it's from the 19th century, even though it was manufactured.
I've seen it, right? Yeah, it's almost almost looks like a glass plate camera.
Yeah, it's a big camera, and people automatically assume it's from the 19th century. So they is that an old timey camera? That's I get that one a lot, you know.
Do you have
and people gravitate to it, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's just it's caused me to you know, particularly if someone comes up to me who might be someone that a superficial male might be interested in talking with. and I'll end up getting drawn into this conversation and end up totally fucking up all the pictures because I was distracted too much.
Yeah.
But it never fails. I mean, I have the big camera. So, and this is the other thing that really gets me is you can be somewhere where there's nobody around at all. And then you set up the camera, and then people's cars and their Winnebagos and everything start stopping, and they just come over to where you are, thinking that, oh, well, he's got the big camera. He must know what he's doing. There must be a good picture here or something. Remember when they shut down the government in, I believe, 96?
Oh, yes, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, I showed up. I was working for American Airlines, and I was working with a friend of mine in London, and I had, hey, come over. We'll go to Moab. Mm-hmm. And so he flies over from England, and we as soon as we get to the hotel, we discover the government's been shut down. Yeah. And I'm asking about the parks, and they said, well, they're closed because the government shut down. And without missing a beat, some guy in the lobby said, it's Clinton's fault.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Obviously, yeah.
And so that meant we couldn't go into the national parks, but Dead Horse Point State Park, which has this beautiful bend of the Colorado River, it was used to play the part of the Grand Canyon in the final scene of Thelma and Louise.
Oh, wow.
So we decided, okay, we'll go there.
Yeah.
So Malcolm and I go there, and we're the only ones there, and I set up my camera, and pretty soon this guy comes along and comes over to where we are. Not only is he, like, in close proximity, his tripod legs are actually overlapping my tripod legs. That's how close. And we're the only people there.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, it's just this big expanse that goes on.
Right, right.
And I turn around to Malcolm, who just caught a picture of me, and I've got this look on my face like, what the fuck?
It's like sitting in a movie theater that's empty, and someone comes in and sits down right in front
exactly.
of you.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or if you go camping and it's an open space, everybody, the people can just go right next to you. You know, there is some sort of, you know, herd mentality thing going on there. But yeah, the big camera does that. People just like, you know, go. But as far as stupid things... high on my list is like the, I believe they were Brits, and they had their toddlers with them sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon. It's 1,600 feet straight off the edge of this thing. And these kids are they're no older than 3 or 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And all it takes is just one slip up and they're gone.
Yeah.
And these people are acting like this. There's just this thing that people are unable to distinguish between going to a national park and like going to an IMAX theater or something.
I know.
They don't realize the danger that they're in a lot of the times.
Yeah.
And I include myself in that. I've been lost. I've had, you know, near death experiences because of my own stupidity in national parks.
Yeah. And there is a sense of danger there. I mean, I lived very close to Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, and I was there a lot, spent a lot of time there in the 5 years I lived in Hawaii. And I always got that sense of palpable danger, like something could go horribly awry. We're at the whimsy of geology here, and suddenly we're stuck in the path of, 30-mile-per-hour lava flows. And so I always had that realization when I was there. It was beautiful to see, and I loved being there. But on the other hand, there was that kind of daredevil idea about it, too.
I believe the average is 11 is the number of people every year that just fall off the edge in Grand Canyon.
Yeah. Yeah. Like yeah. Yeah. There are lots of pictures at volcanoes, too, of people falling into.
And the other thing they do there is people go down hiking into the canyon bringing with them a Pepsi. You know?
God.
And have to be airlifted out from dehydration before they get to get back, you know.
Right, right.
And that's just normal. That's what I mean is like, those are things that just look like, oh, I can go down there.
Uh-huh.
That's not a big deal. It's not like mountain climbing or something. You don't really understand how quickly you could be in some real serious shit.
Yeah.
And that's, there's also the idea of going out by yourself and getting lost, which I did at White Sands National. It was just a monument then. It's National Park now.
Mm-hmm.
This was 94. And I got lost. I was out all night long, a missing hiker. And they got into my car, and the park rangers did, they found my passport in my car. They called my house and left a message on my machine to please get in touch with them. Meanwhile, I'm out on the dunes trying to find my way back to the road, and I can't find it. And I was out there for 9 hours until I finally found the highway. I mean, I knew where the highway was, but I knew also it was 11 miles. And so I had to hike those 11 miles between 6 p.m. and midnight with only just one of those Evian little quart bottles, you know.
So what's going through your head as you're spending 9 hours out there? Are you thinking, oh, shit, I'm going to die out here? Did panic set in at any point?
No, not really, because I knew that I could eventually get to the highway, but I was obviously cursing myself. I was thinking about my girlfriend, but I wasn't, you know, that was actually the woman I was dating at the time. It was more about, I was thinking about the problems we were having with our relationship.
So you sound like a pretty even-keeled guy. Like, you're lost, you have no way back to the road.
Well, see, that's the deal. I could see the stars, so I knew which way was north and south. The only thing I didn't know was where the road was. Uh-huh. And the road was not laid out the way that I thought it was. It kind of went in a southwest or southeast and northwest direction. Mm-hmm. But I could see the lights of Holloman Air Force Base. I could see the lights of Alamogordo, and I could see the lights of Las Cruces, and I could also see the stars. So I knew which way was south, and I knew if I just went due south that I'd eventually hit the highway.
Yeah.
But what was really disappointing about that was when I got to the highway, I didn't know if I needed to go east or west to hit the visitor center. So I went like west for like a mile and realized, it wasn't a mile. It was an hour. I hiked an hour west. And realized, it can't be that way. So I turned around and hiked an hour or 2 hours back east. And all the time, there's cars going by. And I'm like trying to, flag somebody. Now it's the middle of the night,
Yeah.
In the middle of New Mexico. And finally, a trucker called the sheriff's department. And they sent a deputy out to pick me up. It took me back to the park. They opened up the park. Because they close it at night. They opened up the park to take me back to my car. And then I went directly to what's the chain of restaurants? Where do you go to get breakfast?
Denny's?
Denny's.
Yeah, okay.
Man.
All right, shit.
I went directly to Denny's and bought like everything,
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was wild. And because my plan was to just go out there and shoot the sunset and then come back home on the red eye back to Dallas. So I ended up like standing by to get on by like on a 10:30 a.m. flight out of El Paso. And I'm there and like everybody's on the plane and they finally call my name to go in. And I go in to coach and I was like, there's not a seat here. And the flight attendant just points to a first class seat and said, we'll just sit here because we're pushing off at this point. Mm-hmm. And I sit down in this first class seat. I got sand all over me. I look like some prospector, And she goes, you got lucky this time. I said, I deserved it this time.
Okay, one last break. Back with more Mike right after this.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
What do you recommend, I think, for people who like to go off the beaten path? I know when I go to a national park, I like to take the road less traveled. Are there contingencies that you would recommend for people as far as safety goes, as far as,
if they find themselves lost? And in places where it's appropriate, bear spray.
Yeah. Bear spray.
I was at Glacier National Park, and I had to give up my idea of what I was going to shoot because of grizzly activity on the trail.
Oh, Jesus.
But they had shut down the trail. So you don't want to mess around with those people when they say they're grizzlies. You don't want to question that.
Yeah, right. Oh, sure. They say this all the time.
Yeah,
no, you want to be like that. Is there, yeah, if you don't have the bear spray, is there some other thing you can do to ward off the bears? Like I always hear, like,
what you need
loud
to do
noises.
Is, you know, listen, don't even listen to me on this, because okay. I've only run into bears a couple of times, and that was in my car. I'd see them and they were little cubs.
Yeah.
I've never run into a bear on a trail before, but listen to the latest Seth Rogen podcast, because he knows, it's just like a person who's related to somebody he knows or something like that. In Canada that was mauled by a grizzly bear. And this wow. guy grew up in the woods. He was, you know, he was thoroughly familiar with how to handle himself and everything, and was lucky to live through it. It's a great story. I would direct people to that, you know.
Yeah.
But as far as like getting off the beaten path, I mean, and let's just get rid of the danger part of it. I don't know. I mean, I tend to try to avoid going places where it's just going to be me for more than a couple of hours at a time.
Yeah.
Or I know that there's not going to be anybody around. I really kind of avoid that, because I've run into rattlesnakes and stuff. And so it's just a matter of, you know, common sense as far as going alone.
Yeah.
Because if you know, you'll end up like 127 hours or something, you know, you just never know.
Right. Well, Jesus, Mike, I'm so glad we had an opportunity to talk about this shit. I had no idea. I had no intention of spending the hour talking about national parks, but I'm so glad we did. It's a nice departure from talking about the existential threats that we face every day. And by the way, yeah, speaking of that, how are you holding up with regard to following all of these news events every day? Because I was just talking with Kimberly the other day, and you know, I don't remember any other time in which we have gone from one existential threat to another existential threat to another one, to another one, to another one. And it's, I think it's wearing on a lot of us. I think we're all at some level of low frequency stress because of it.
I don't think that really dawned on me until today when I heard Stephanie Miller mention it or somebody. So, you know, it was along the lines of like, first we had COVID, now we got the Russian thing.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, the Russian thing is actually more of a threat, I don't think it's really dawned on people yet.
Yeah.
That potential there. But yeah, I mean, I'm just here in this little town of 20,000 people, and I've been working on a contract for what was supposed to be 5 months. It's been a solid year now. Mm-hmm. And I've just kind of had my nose down in this code I'm writing. That's kept me away from like doing a lot of my bits and songs and things. Part of it is just the time constraint there, because I can't stay up late. I got to get all my sleep, because I have to be alert all day for what I'm doing.
I know what you mean.
And plus I have a freaking dog now, and that, that takes away a certain number of hours out of my day.
What's your dog's name again?
Sophie.
Oh, cute. Yeah. She's nice.
Yeah. She's really adorable. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know what I was thinking when I got this dog, but he's really cute.
Now you're stuck.
But, yeah, I know. I've really held off on doing anything about Russia in terms of like funny songs and stuff, because it's not funny to me at all. And you know, most people are this way about Trump and things like that. You know, like, how can you joke about things like this? Well, actually, he's a clown, so it's really kind of easy.
Yeah, right.
And people who make asses out of themselves, there's no shortage of that. Like Lauren
Boebert
saying, saying Lieutenant
Corporal.
Lieutenant Corporal. Oh, wow. So, you know, those things, I would – oh, by the way, did you see Fuglesang's tweet? Yeah, you saw that, where he did the Pirates of Penzance.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? He did a thing about my last name on his show, and he did it 2 weeks in a row when I was on. I'm on every Wednesday night. I'm going on again tonight.
Right.
And right at the top of my segment, I want to say about a month or two ago, he did this whole ditty about my last name with all these stanzas that rhyme with my name. And I was blown away. I couldn't believe it.
I was that way with this thing I guess I don't have time to recite it, but it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was very nice to DM me and say, yeah, but I don't have your musical talent. I said, well, I don't know about that. I said, the hard thing is coming up with the idea.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is with, you know, I did think of one idea, and I really wish I'd produced it, which was, you know, Seize That Yacht, the new game show. right. But, you know, you think of something like that. Well, okay, that's I'm going to have to get several people involved. I'm going to have to write it and everything. And I've this past couple of weeks when I've been off, I've really been dedicating it to, like, spring cleaning and, and you know, getting the house in shape. But, yeah, it really depresses me. It depresses me to see people like the Koch brothers are not only continuing to do business, but they're opposing any sanctions just so they can line their big fat wallets more, you know, and to see the politicians that are and Tucker Carlson and people like that who are doing Putin's bidding still. But the other side of that, I think, is and I think you mentioned it today or that, you know, there's that patriotism thing that comes into play, and Biden's approval rating is going up because of it. And I think a lot of people who may have been on the fence or not, maybe not been a complete Trump psycho, are starting to look at the world in a different way now. Maybe they're starting to see that maybe Hillary's emails aren't as important as they, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's really throwing everything into focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's something that's good that's coming out. People are realizing what's at stake.
Yeah, yeah. And I hope that that reinforces this notion or at least establishes the notion that the most important thing about whoever it is sitting at the Resolute desk in the Oval Office is competent. That person has got to be wired into the crisis and not doing this bullshit pretend pundit nonsense, which is what Donald Trump has
To this day, there are people who you wouldn't have believed it 10 years ago that are who still think that he's the one who has balls.
Right.
And he's the one who, you know, who wouldn't be afraid to go in there and kick ass, you know.
And
of course, then you want to, if you have the ability to communicate to this person, you're like, okay, exactly what are you saying should happen then? Explain to me how it happens.
You know? Yeah.
And then at that point, they just don't want to continue talking.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying back to every Republican I end up encountering. They're like, oh, yeah, Joe Biden needs to get tougher. He needs to do more. Well, what exactly that won't precipitate, you know, ballistic missiles with nuclear warheads going off all over the place?
Right. And these same people will never talk about what a president should do to reduce the price of healthcare.
Right, right. Yeah.
They don't want to talk about that shit. They just want to talk about balls and trucks and missiles and boom, boom. You know?
They just want to talk about balls. You know what? One last question for you, Mike, before I let you go. As a NASA geek, what do you think of Jeff Bezos sending Pete Davidson into space? Is that devaluing the act of going to space that they're sending Pete Davidson?
Well, you know, just hold on because it's going to, you know, I mean, how can Snooki be far behind?
Yeah, shit. It's not that far off, is it?
I'm much more excited about the James Webb Space Telescope. They had a press conference today where they're starting to get those mirrors aligned, and we're starting to see a hint of just how much better these images are going to be. And those are going to be coming in just a couple of months, you know.
I'm
very excited about that.
Yeah, and just briefly, can you explain what it is that the James Webb Space Telescope can see back in time? I think a lot of people are confused by this concept. How does this telescope take pictures going back in time?
It all has to do with the Doppler shift. The Doppler shift for sound is like when a car goes by and it's honking its horn, you hear that, right?
Yeah.
So it's the shift in pitch. Well, that's from when it's approaching you, it's a higher frequency than it really is. And then when it goes away from you, it's a lower frequency. And that's because as it's coming towards you, the waves of sound are being scrunched together.
Yeah.
And as it leaves you, the waves of sound are being stretched out. And stretched out waves means a lower frequency. So you just take that for sound and you apply that to light. So if something is coming towards you, it has a blue shift. And if something is going away from you, it has a red shift, okay? So it all has to do with what part of the light spectrum that light is. So the further a galaxy is away from us, the faster it's moving away. Yeah. So its red shift is really stretched out, okay? So you take like the Hubble Space Telescope, it had a very limited ability to sense things in certain parts of the spectrum. It could only go so far into the infrared.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we've had other, we had a satellite called IRAS in the 80s that was an infrared observatory. So it was built specifically for observing infrared wavelengths. Well, the James Webb Space Telescope, because of the way it's designed and where it is in space and everything, can see much, much further into those red wavelengths.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that's important is when you get to objects in space that are near the within the first 100 million years of the Earth, of the universe being formed, within the first 100 million years after the Big Bang, that is so far in the past that that light has been shifted that much further into the infrared wavelengths. And so you needed an instrument that was tuned for that.
Yeah.
To be able to, because Hubble can only see so far back just for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully I've explained that.
Yeah, yeah. And then plus it's the phenomenon where, you know, you may see a star in the night sky and the light you're seeing left that star a million years ago. So right. Technically but- you're seeing light from a million years ago. Is that kind of a right. more simplistic way of explaining the same
well,
thing?
Well, yeah, but again, though, because of this redshift, that meant that anything that was older than like a certain time going back,
yeah.
you couldn't see it at all.
Right.
You would never be able to detect it.
Yes.
Because it's so far shifted into the infrared.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but
yeah,
the,
I mean, the
James Webb Space Telescope, yeah, the James Webb can pick that up now.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And not only that, because it's infrared, it can see through clouds of dust. So we'll be able to see the center of the Milky Way and image the black hole at the center of the Milky Way galaxy to a great degree of detail and see and be able to see we'll be able to see exoplanets, you know, planets around other stars with a lot more clarity.
Yeah, and that's what is piquing my interest, because I read that we'll actually be able to see some surface features of those exoplanets. Am I right about that, or did I get that?
Well, I'm not sure if that's specifically a Webb thing. I haven't really, on the exoplanet thing, I haven't really looked that much into what Webb was going to do, but there are other telescopes that are planned that are going to be built specifically for imaging exoplanets.
I see.
And they will be able to do that. So
okay.
Those are coming as well. And ground-based telescopes, I forget what it's called, but it's this huge optical telescope that's going up in Chile that's got a 30 meter mirror.
Oh my gosh.
So you combine that with the laser beam you send a laser up and it can adjust the mirror to counter the effects of the diffraction in the atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
It will be able to image those kinds of things with more detail as well.
Just
there's a
incredible.
Lot of fun stuff that's coming. It's not just fucking Pete Davidson.
Yeah, you're so right. Well, okay, where can people follow your photography and your song parodies and all of that stuff?
Okay, the photography website is Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Hardiman, H-A-R-D-E-M-A-N, all one word, michaelhardiman.com. That's my photography. And the Twitter account is Rocky MNTN Mike. And it's Rocky underscore mountain underscore Mike on Instagram.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you so
Thanks
much
for having
my
me
friend.
On. This was a blast. I appreciate it.
Yeah, God, I love this. This was so much fun. I could talk about National Park Service and I could talk about NASA and all this crap for hours and hours and hours. So nice little treat here. So thanks, my friend. I appreciate it.
Have a great one.
You too. Take care. Bye bye.
I gonna steal the night. Watch now the light can move. In the dark, no denying. Your lips, nobody like you. Kissing like we're saved. Heaven on the ground, moved all around. Can we trust what we say?